Hi, and welcome to the iPhone Life podcast. I'm Donna Schill, editor-in-chief at iPhone Life.
And I'm David Averbach, CEO and publisher.
Each episode, we bring to you the best apps, top tips, and great gear in the iOS world. And today, we have a special theme. We're just recording right after Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference. So we have a lot of news from Apple about the new operating systems for the iPhone, iPad, Mac, and Apple Watch, plus all the other ones. So stay tuned for a fun episode.
Yes.
First, we have a message from our sponsor, Incogni. So if you're worried at all about going online and what personal information is being shared across the web, if you're getting spam calls, if you're worried about anything like identity theft, the potential of that happening to you, then you can use this amazing service called Incogni that will just cover your bases and will help protect your personal data for you so you don't have to worry about it.
And basically how it works is your data ends up on all of these sites that are called data brokers. And when we say data, it's not just your name, it's not just your phone number. They can have your social security card, your medical information, all of this stuff. And what Incogni does is it scans the web to make sure that your data isn't out there. And if it is out there, they request it be taken down. So Donna and I both use this service now, is that correct?
Yes, it's so nice. I mean, I signed up, it took less than 10 minutes. And now it's about 200 services or 200 data broker sites that my information has been taken down from. I can log on through their website and see what status of those requests are. So I can see that I've had all that information taken down, which is just nice peace of mind.
It's great peace of mind. It helps prevent spam calls. It helps prevent your data being in data breaches and things like that. It's a really great service. We've partnered with them to offer you 55% off. So to get this service at a great discount, go to iPhoneLife.com/Incogni.
All right. Next up, I want to tell you about our premium subscription called iPhone Life Insider. We have a premium educational service that's really tailored for Apple enthusiasts so you can get the most out of your Apple devices. When you sign up, you get all of our live online courses with weekly sessions. We're about to teach our annual Apple Watch course, which is a huge hit. Mm-hmm. We're teaching our iOS 18.5 course right now, so you're getting all the updates that you missed since Apple released last fall. There's a lot of fun stuff in there. We have an AI course coming up too in the following month after Apple Watch, so you can be making sure that you're using AI in all different kinds of ways in your everyday life to make it more convenient. And of course, in the fall, we'll be having a course on the new iOS, which, little
spoiler.
Sneak peek here, it's now called iOS 26. So you'll be learning about that too. We also have a digital subscription to our magazine, video versions of our daily tip that you know and love, and also Ask an Expert through our Facebook community. So if you have any tech issues, we answer your issues there. What else am I missing?
Ad-free versions of this podcast.
Yes, and with bonus content.
Bonus content in each episode, and actually ad-free experience across iPhone Life. So no ads in any of your newsletters, any of that. So it's a great service for anybody looking to master their Apple devices. And we have a discount for podcast listeners. So go to iPhoneLife.com/podcast discount, save 30%. Plus, if you're a senior service member or what am I missing?
Teacher,
save an extra 10%. So that's up to 40%.
Yes. And now is a good time to sign up. Make sure you do right now so you can get there in time for our live Apple Watch course.
If you have an Apple Watch, this course is a must attend.
Yes. All right. So let's get into the event.
Yes.
First, before we jump into all the iOS 26 features, let's talk about big picture. Mm-hmm. What was your take on this event?
Yeah, I'm going to take a step even farther back for anybody listening who's like, what the heck is WWDC?
Yeah.
Okay, WWDC, Donna introduced a little bit in the beginning, stands for Worldwide Developer Conference. So each June, Apple has developer conference for all the developers for Apple's ecosystem, but it's noteworthy to us, even though we're not developers, because the beginning of the conference, they have a big press event where they announce all the latest updates to all the operating systems. But these updates usually come in September. So they tell us now what the next operating system will look like, and then they release the betas in what, June or July?
Lately, it's been the first week of July.
Okay, so first week of July, people who want to test it out, even though it's not very stable, can download it, but the general user will have access to this in September. So we're about to go over all the new operating systems. They come out in September.
Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting, yeah, thank you. It's kind of an interesting system they have, and it allows developers to have some time between June and September to prepare their apps to be compatible with all the new features. Mm-hmm. So that's why they do it. And really in the last few years, there's been a shift where the public betas are a lot more stable than they used to be too. So for any of you listening at home, it's something you might want to consider trying out one of the public betas, especially if you have a newer iPhone that would be probably less likely to be buggy with it. Otherwise, it's just still fun to know what's coming for your phone in September.
Yeah, and to take a step even farther back, welcome back, Donna.
Thank you. So good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to be back recording this. Donna was out on parental leave, and so we will keep you posted. We're back on our regular recording schedule. As the betas come out, we'll let you know. We'll let you know if they're buggy or not and if you should be using them.
Yeah, David and I are usually take the risk and we try the public betas because we're excited about the new features so we can be your guinea pigs.
Yes, we'll try them out first and then let you all know if you should do it.
So a big theme, this was kind of a fun event because when I started at iPhone Life, one of my first projects was doing a special edition about iOS 7.
Oh, wow.
And it was this major, huge redesign. Everything about the iPhone interface changed. And this event, it was sort of the biggest thing since iOS 7 is the theme because everything's been redesigned once again. And pretty much since iOS 7, a lot of things have stayed the same. There's been some design tweaks, but really Apple's left that alone.
Yeah, and it's important to reference iOS 7 because those of you who either weren't following Apple closely then or didn't have Apple products might not be aware of just how radical of a redesign it was. But it really changed how every single app looked and felt. And that reverberated out to all the third-party apps as well. So your iPhone really felt dramatically different after iOS 7. And everything Apple's saying, all of the screenshots they're showing us, have that same feeling that we're about to get a completely fresh iOS.
What's funny, too, is I feel like there's a reputation for redesigns, like a bad reputation where people are like, I'm going to hate this because everything's going to change mm-hmm. where I go to do things. iOS 7, I feel like Apple pulled off in a really elegant way where it just kind of made everything better. And I actually think the redesigns we saw today are similar, where I didn't see anything that gave me pause or made me worried.
I totally agree. And I think that when iOS 7 happened, Apple had been using a design style that had become outdated. And so it was necessary. They were doing, I'm going to...
Skeuomorphic. Like,
thank you. Skeuomorphism was a word.
I haven't thought about that for a while.
It was in the zeitgeist in iOS 7.
Yeah.
So just to back up, a flashback here. This was actually a Steve Jobs thing. He really believed that design should imitate real life. So they designed these apps to look and feel like the real life counterparts. So for example, the Notes app actually looked like a Notes, like a notepad.
Mm-hmm. That one still does.
It's not as much. It literally was like yellow lined legal paper.
Yeah.
The calendar looked like a physical calendar. Now, then with iOS 7, they got rid of that, right? And so I think because it was it got limiting after a while to have everything like your Notes app had yellow lines in it. We didn't need that anymore.
Yeah.
And it does feel like a lot of the design elements in iOS are just a little bit outdated. And when you saw the new fresh ones, you're like, oh yeah, I did not need. The example that stuck out to me was the Photos app. And it was like, I don't need a black box on either side. You can get rid of that and it's just cleaner.
Totally. It is interesting with the skeuomorphic design, how like we move further and further away from that as now we're all used to having digital lives. We don't need to be like, oh, it's like a pen and paper.
Exactly.
People get it. But yeah, so with today's announcement, we got a redesign across all the devices. It's not just the iPhone. It's the iPhone, iPad, Mac, and Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple also made an interesting move where they're changing the naming conventions. So the redesign sort of unifies the look of all the devices, and the naming now is just 26 across the board. And, you know, it's similar to like car models where it's 1 year ahead. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's 26.
It'll come out in September 25, but it'll be called iOS 26. Mm-hmm. But this is noteworthy too, because if you have multiple devices, you know this. WatchOS was on like, what, 10 or something?
Yeah.
I literally don't know, right? That's the point. They all had different numbers and it was like really TVOS weird. And yeah,
different too.
It was weird and confusing to keep up. And also, as these numbers got higher and higher, 19 just felt like such a random thing. So like we were counting from 2008 when the Apple was released, and I think it was really nice just to get rid of all of that, start with a clean slate, and name it after a year. It yeah. made sense.
It'll definitely make it easier for us with writing about yes. and remembering all these things. But I think it'll make it easier for everyone.
And I think also having all of them with 26, as Donna mentioned, is also representative of the fact that they unified a lot of elements across all of their hard software. So that also felt really nice to have this kind of across all of them. To describe how this new OS, all these elements look and feel, if anybody's ever used the Vision Pro, they stole a lot of their elements from that.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever
sort of transparent design.
Exactly. And so how what they're describing it as is liquid glass, which is kind of a pretentious name, true to Apple.
Yeah.
Apple's marketing.
Very on brand.
Very on brand. But I think it's an accurate description as well. Because it
yeah.
they made it look and feel like all these elements are transparent, but they have it visually appear so that there's layers, right? So it looks like you have, if you do the control center, for example, you can still see what's behind it, but the transparency makes it feel like you kind of have a glass pane to control it, and then the glass pane disappears. And so it has a nice feeling of layers, wouldn't you say?
Yes. And like when they were first showing it, I was like, are they just putting like a fresh coat of paint on the iOS and it's mm-hmm. exactly the same? But I went into this Apple event in general being a little pissed off at Apple because I was annoyed that they didn't deliver on all the features they promised last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, like the redesign, I walked away feeling impressed with because I don't think it was merely just like a pretty distraction from
yeah.
we didn't follow through with our promised AI. It actually has really a lot of functional features to it. We'll get into a lot of the like new practical features that they are coming out with, but in terms of the design, it's hard to say without getting a hands-on demo yet, but to me it felt like menus and buttons kind of like appear, you have those options, but because they're semi-transparent and they blend with things, like they're not in your way,
they can recede when you don't need them. And I think the good example again is the Photos app, where yes, you sometimes need to control which type of photo you're taking, but you don't need a black box that has those buttons there all the time. And so having them appear when you want them but recede when you don't want them, so you can see the full viewfinder when taking a photo, is just really nice.
Yeah, that's a good example. It's helpful to have an example, otherwise yeah. it's like feels pretty vague. There are also some cool things with it. I mean, this is less useful, but just still cool, where with your wallpaper, you can make them like a 3D effect
mm-hmm.
That reacts to movements. And it seems like for pictures of pets or your kids or whatever on the home screen, that'll be fun.
The photos had nice 3D effects.
Yeah.
So
and I think that'll be only on phones that have the Neural Engine. Some of them, it's a little like, I think it won't be like all features available on all phones. We'll yeah. have to. Our team is digging up that right now because everyone's writing roundups about all the new stuff, and they'll like go into the fine print to find mm-hmm. out.
Okay, so before we dive too far into iOS specifically,
yeah,
any other takeaways on the event coverage overall?
Something that our team talked a lot about after we just kind of huddled together after the announcement, and across the board, people felt like it was functional AI features
mm-hmm.
and just functional in general, because not all the features are, it's totally clear how much AI is involved. But last year, we got a lot of AI features that haven't really pulled that well from our audience, where they're like, I'm not actually, and also just polls in general, like people aren't using the writing tools or the Genmojis or whatever as much as Apple would hope.
Yes.
But this year, it's like Apple actually released stuff that I think all of us will use and enjoy a lot. And they're not like big wow features, but all they're sort of bits and bobs. And if you collect them all together, it turns into something where I'm like, oh, wow, I'm actually excited about iOS 26.
No, I completely agree. It's with AI, it's being added to every single product under the sun. And sometimes you're like, well, do you really need AI on a dryer? For example, my dryer has AI.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if I need it. It seems to dry my clothes like normal. But this was very practical application of AI.
Yeah. And it was nice. I feel like Apple last year, they felt the pressure and were trying, there's so much hype about AI that they were like wanting to make sure they weren't missing out on that. But this year they just did focus more on useful things and things that they can deliver on. So I think that was a big theme. Another one is I was really waiting to hear what Apple was going to say about AI Siri, because I've been really excited about AI Siri, and, you know, ChatGPT is making strides in that area with advanced voice mode. Mm-hmm. And so I was hoping Apple would have more to say, and they didn't. I didn't know what they would do, but they pretty much said that there's been some issues with delivering AI Siri and like stay tuned to hear more about it in the coming year. That was what they just said at the very beginning and then never mentioned it again.
It was really soft. I was surprised. I expected them, you know, because it's at this point, it's been literally a year since they announced it.
Yeah.
That I expected them to have some more firm dates and promises, and they didn't give any of that.
Nothing.
It really feels like the issues they're having are major and they're way away from being able to release this.
I know. And that I definitely want to circle back to talk about, like, once we get through the announcement a little more, because I feel like that is, it is a pretty big bummer. And it's worth hashing out.
It absolutely is, especially as, you know, like you're mentioning, ChatGPT has become so functional, and I ask it questions all the time.
Me too.
And the fact that Apple is seemingly so far behind ChatGPT on this is a huge bummer, especially because that native integration is really nice. Being able to ask Siri and just have it answer the questions right away would be so helpful.
I know. And I guess the silver lining is you can use ChatGPT integration on your phone. And mm-hmm. I've been using that a lot. So that sort of gets you part of the way there. But if it was Apple Intelligence doing it and Siri doing it, I'd also feel a lot better about it because it protects your privacy.
Yeah.
Whereas like with ChatGPT, you're kind of like, well, I guess I'm just putting all my information.
And I think as ChatGPT gets better, it makes the difference between that and Siri so glaring. Sometimes I'll ask my HomePod something and I'll just get the dumbest answers. And it gets more and more embarrassing for Apple as you ask ChatGPT and you get smarter and smarter answers.
Yeah, like
even basic questions like, what's the weather going to be today? And sometimes it'll just give me just the dumbest answers.
I know. And like, I agree. I feel like in the past few months, ChatGPT or Perplexity is another one I use a lot. Like, it's just getting better and better.
Yeah.
And it's like, so it's starting to... I think it's going to be a problem for Apple if they don't address it.
Exactly.
Let's just put it that way. But so those were, to me, were the biggest things I picked from today. Mm-hmm. What about you?
No, I think you nailed it. I think those were my big ones. Really practical announcement. Like, all of the things announced are practical things I'll use in my life. They weren't huge, ambitious swings, which also makes me feel better given that Apple swung and missed on the latest versions of AI.
At least we'll get these features.
Yes. And also the unification is huge, and we'll get to that more. So let's get into it.
And I guess just to tease one section, I feel like the secret, like the unexpected star of the show is the iPad.
I know.
And I'm excited to get into that.
Me too.
That's actually something, there are features there that we've been kind of hoping and praying for a long, long time.
At one point I joked, wow, Apple must have listened to our podcast.
Yeah, I know.
Okay,
so we have some good news for you there.
Yes, let's start with what is now going to be iOS 26.
Yes.
Bah, bah, bah.
So yeah, the biggest revamp since iOS 7. So as David said, this is based off the Apple Vision Pro. That's mm-hmm. the augmented reality headset that Apple released and that probably most of you haven't tried because it's been sort of a flop up until now.
Yeah, but let's take a minute to talk about that because it has been a flop. But Donna and I, when we used it, both really liked the user experience. The operating system
really
itself
did.
Was great. It's just wearing a big, bulky headset all the time was limiting, and it also did not replace a computer in the way they hoped it would. So
yeah.
Apple Vision Pro has its limitations, but taking elements of that design style and bringing it to iPhone, I was excited about.
Me too. It was really, that part I thought was really elegantly done. Mm-hmm. And the kind of overlaying that, the like layers that they created with the Vision Pro, I'm excited they're somehow recreating on the iPhone. And I was a little skeptical about that too, because I was like, well, how do you map the Vision OS? Because that's like layers over real life.
Yeah.
How do you do that on the iPhone, but they managed to in a way that I think looks really cool.
I think it looks great. Yeah.
So
the first thing you'll see is the lock screen has a lot of new features. And so they took the same liquid glass and put it to the lock screen. So you now have, the time will take up the amount of space that your photo allows for. So it uses AI to look at your photo, see what the subject is, see how much negative space there is, and try to put the time there.
That was cool. Yeah.
Which I thought looked nice. I think, again, some of the designers in the room as we were watching this were a little skeptical that Apple could nail that. So we'll have to see, but it looked cool. The feature I like too, and this is an example of using AI in a small background way, but that is effective, is as you get more notifications, it can adjust the image to have potentially move the image up to give more space for the notifications. It's hard to explain without seeing it, but it uses AI to kind of adjust your lock screen to show, have more space for notifications. Did I describe that clearly at all?
I think so, yeah. And just like the point about the time changing, that's actually an example of one of the practical changes.
Yes.
I liked the feature where you could have like your dog's head partially covering a number, but like a lot of your photos, it wouldn't work right with it because it didn't quite fit right with the timepiece that Apple had. So now it's like, it's just nice when things like that'll just automatically work for you because AI made it happen.
I agree. There's also new lock screen mode for when you listen to music, which has, you know, images and videos for that go with the songs. They were like, it's a great opportunity for artists to showcase their visual components of their work. And it looked fine. I don't know.
A lot of it is like they're making things look 3D.
Yeah.
So it looked like there were like things from the image art moving towards you, and that was kind of cool.
They redesigned a lot of the apps to have the same liquid glass feel. Again, it looked different. It looked nice. It looked fresh, but it wasn't a major change. They have a new view though for your apps that is transparent, so you can actually like see the background through the apps. It looked too transparent to me. Like, I was nervous that I would have a hard time using it.
I was excited about
okay.
that. Like, I just liked the kind of, I can't remember what word, some marketing word they used for it, but like everything looks kind of like ghosty. Like, it's like kind of partially transparent app icons and menus and stuff like that. And I mean, it just looked pretty, it looks like a look that only Apple could pull off.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like Android devices have a lot of the features that Apple came out with this time around, but Apple does have that like signature look. It, like everything looks kind of like jelly. I mean, liquid glass is actually not a bad description of what it looks like.
Yeah, they did good on the naming. It does look pretty. Like that, but I agree. Other companies would have done it and it wouldn't have looked as cool. Apple did pull it off.
They did. Yeah. So I'll have to give that a try. It might be like, so I had readability on my mind when looking in general through the layered things where I'm like, can you read the menus?
Mm-hmm.
Is it clear enough? So we'll see how Apple did. But it seemed like they put a lot of thought into it. Like things will, they have it that so it'll look pretty in dark mode or light mode.
Totally.
Yeah.
Other features that you liked?
So phone and messages had a lot of interesting updates mm-hmm. with iOS 26.
Really There's, practical ones too.
Yeah. So first of all, they have the favorites is redesigned instead of just being a list. They have more like bubbles like in the messages app that has their profile photo and things mm-hmm. like that. I liked that. Call screening is a big one. It answers the phone for you when an unknown number calls, finds out who it is, and then like gives you the choice of whether you want to pick it up or not.
Yeah.
That sounds really nice.
I love the new voicemail transcription and I can listen to the voicemail and pick it up.
Yeah.
So this is one step further. If it's an unknown number, you can set it so it won't even ring. It just takes them straight to the voicemail. They're leaving a voicemail and then you can look at it and decide if you want to answer it.
Yeah, so that seems cool. Another one is hold assist.
That was so cool.
So I feel like I've had a lot of reasons where I can't think of exactly why, but I've had a lot of calls where I've been on hold for a long time mm-hmm. with different companies, and it's such a waste of life. I hate it.
You feel trapped, right?
Because yeah.
clearly you're willing to stay on hold because it's important to you, but yet you just end up spending an hour sitting there listening to random generic music.
Sucks, yeah.
Yeah.
It really sucks. So now, how does it work again?
Basically, another very practical use of AI, uses AI to detect hold music, which I thought was cool, which is its own unique genre of music, as we all know. And then it brings up an option to say, it says, are you on hold? Do you want to, I can't remember the term they use, but I thought of it as putting your hold music on hold. So you just push the button and it basically, the music goes away. You can use your phone like normal. You can even put your phone away. And then when you actually reach the person you're trying to reach, it will notify you that they're on the call. And they didn't explicitly say this, but I believe what it does is it literally will use AI to tell the person who picked up, the customer service representative, oh, this person has you on hold. They are coming to the phone right now.
It'll be like, David's on his way.
That's why I just love the idea of putting the hold person on hold.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that seems really nice. It does seem like you'd have to be careful to keep your phone nearby and in sight so you don't miss it still, but like just not having to sit there and having like everyone in your house listening to the horrible hold music while you're doing other things.
That was really cool.
Better.
Another similar thing within the same suite of features is they now have a separate, I think what it is you have to approve a text message from a new number. And so one of the things that's happening now is that marketers are starting to use text messages a lot more.
Yes.
And our phones are just getting so filled up with all of these random spam text messages. So now they all will go to a separate inbox and you don't have to look at them unless you explicitly say, oh, this is a number I want to receive messages from. And especially during political season, it just feels like literally like 10, 15 times a day I'm getting text messages. I'm really excited about this idea of kind of putting those in their own little sandbox.
And some of it's my own fault, so I'll like give my phone number to companies to get a discount.
We all do that now, though.
Yeah, and so then it'll just be really nice to not have those get mixed in with important messages from family and friends that I really need to see.
Yeah.
But they also redid the way that they filter messages. So you know how right now you can go and you can see like tap back far enough on the upper left where you just see like all your unread messages or messages from unknown numbers, but it's kind of weird. And
yeah.
I don't know. So they now have it in a way that's like more similar to other filtering sites you would see where it's like a filtering icon and you tap that and can quickly, it just looks like it's like, you're not going to miss stuff. Whereas right now you could easily just never know that those filters options were there.
Totally. The one text message thing that I didn't think was great was the backgrounds for texts. It just felt like they were going to be annoying and distracting. It's fine. You don't have to turn them on. Also, Noah, who's our COO, made the comment that now where anybody can set them, so you're really at the whim of anybody in your group chat who decides to put a funny background image, and now you're stuck with it.
That's what I didn't like, is that it's similar to like message thread names, that it changes it for everyone.
Yeah.
And that I don't mind as much, but this, it's like you're going to create like these wacky backgrounds that everyone has to live with. And then somehow I feel like with these group messages, sometimes you can't leave them either. So you're just like stuck forever.
A couple other messaging features though that I did really like.
Polls.
Polls I thought was cool. For group messages, you can be like, where do you want to go to dinner or whatever? And you can do a poll, which I thought was cool.
That's fun.
The one though that I thought was really practical and I really wanted, you can see if somebody's texting when you're in a group chat now. That's been one that I've been missing for a long time.
Oh, like say who specifically was typing?
Or that they're typing at all. In a group chat, you can't see if somebody's typing.
But it will just show like it'll just show that someone is typing, or it'll show the specific person.
It'll show the specific person. That's but I'm not
cool.
Totally clear. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. Side note, do you know that in our text messages, you have read receipts on for me?
No. I don't think I have them on in general. That is so – that's really bad too, because I'm really bad about texting, so I probably read it all the time and then don't respond.
Yeah, David, you leave me unread all the time.
You're not supposed to know this. We must have been testing some feature and I turned it on, because I don't have it on in general.
Yeah, it's a funny one.
Okay, wow. Outed me on our podcast.
Yeah,
thanks, Donna.
I can throw
back.
In a – but yeah, I thought this would be the place to tell you.
It really was.
I'm just a little salty about
probably keeping you on red a lot. Also, don't lie, because I know that you don't have yours on. You keep me on red a lot.
Probably.
So it's mutual. It's mutual.
I'll throw in a bonus tip in our show notes about red receipts, because if you don't know about this, it's something that you can avoid, unlike David.
Yes.
So moving on. Wallet got some interesting updates. The Wallet app, I mean, for a while, we've already had there a few states that support digital IDs. Mm-hmm. Now it's like a few more states. I think it was only 9 still, though, so it's a little sad. But
it's progress.
You cannot wait until the day where, like, you can just travel with your iPhone. You don't have to worry about whether you brought your ID or passport.
Well, especially because now one of the great things about Wallet is that Apple Pay has pretty much become ubiquitous, right? Like, almost everywhere you go has Apple Pay now.
Yeah.
And so you don't really have to...
And it took a while for that to happen. Nice.
It took a while. Now it's so nice. And so I really, most of the time, don't bring a wallet. I'm holding my phone because I have a phone wallet that I don't use. Sorry, that was not intuitive. I don't carry a wallet most of the time, except I need an ID, which is gets in the way. And so if IDs get added to wallet and you can use them there, then you really don't need a wallet most of the time.
I know. It's going to be such a free feeling. And so now they did add passport support for domestic travel in the U.S. So that's interesting, where you wouldn't need to bring your physical passport with you.
Yeah, it still made me... Because they said something like at approved locations.
I know. It doesn't replace your physical passport. So it's like, wait, so what does it do?
I think they're building towards it, but it definitely didn't... see this announcement and think, I don't have to carry ID while flying anymore.
Yeah.
I thought, someday I will not have to.
Hopefully sometime in the next, like, 5 years.
Yeah. Another really cool messaging one, translation. So they brought out a few translation tools for both phone calls, FaceTime calls, and messages where it'll live translate for you. So you could get on a phone call with somebody who's not an English speaker. You're speaking English, they're speaking any of the approved languages, and it will be live translating to each of you.
And it's cool because it'll be on phone calls, FaceTime, and also text messages. It'll show both, like, the version in the language that you sent it in and then also in the translated mm-hmm. language. So to me, it's really nice because it seems like it's just – there's, like, no work on your part to make it happen.
Yeah.
You just set it up and go. We had people in the office when we were watching the event saying, like, this could really – they wish – our founder, Hal, was like, I wish I had known this, because there was some family member who's Spanish speaking and it could have made him a lot closer to them. Or I think of my niece and nephew, and they have a lot of family in Angola, and they know a little Portuguese, but not a lot. So this could really allow them to be close with their cousins and family there in a way that just hasn't been possible before. So seems like that one was actually one of the bigger updates, I would say.
Yeah, that was a really it was one of those ones too that just felt like magic. It's like we live in a world now where you can call up anybody and regardless of the language they speak, you can have a conversation. That's just incredible.
Yeah, and has not been possible up to this point. Yeah. So that's pretty amazing.
Another one that was a small update, but I think I'll use it quite a bit. So Apple for a while, or at least since the last OS, has this feature that's called visual intelligence, where you have your camera button on your phone, and if you long press it, it takes you to this view where you can take a photo of something and it'll intelligently show you information about that photo. So you could take a photo of a restaurant sign and it'll tell you the reviews in the restaurant, things like that. But I always forget. Do you use it? I always forget to use it.
So I'm like very late to the party on that. I feel like I've just, honestly, no, I haven't used it though. Because I feel like it's only recently that I even like, knew it was there. Because I feel like Apple, it was one of those ones that they kind of snuck in after the initial iOS 18 release. And I just never was really that aware of it.
Yeah.
But it's cool. And I do have the iPhone 16 Pro. So I have the camera control button that triggers it.
It's a cool idea that I always forget to use. But what they did that I think will be more practical and that I'll use more is now you can do it with screenshots. So
I will use that all the time.
So you can take a screenshot of something you're on and it'll give you the option to image search, which I do all the time. So this is a fun little random bonus hack. But if you're on Hotwire, do you use Hotwire ever?
No.
Okay, Hotwire gives you discounts on hotels. But the deal is they'll give you a really good deal and they'll say it's a 5-star hotel, but we cannot tell you what hotel it is. But we get a good deal. But I always want to know what hotel I'm going to get.
Yeah.
So, but they sometimes have real images from the hotel. So you can image search and look up what hotel it is.
Oh, cool.
So anytime you want to image search right now, how you have to do it is you have to download the image. If you're on Safari, you download the image, and then you go to Google, and there's a little image icon, and you can upload the image to Google, and you image search.
So you've been doing that.
Yeah.
But this will just cut out all those steps.
All of those steps. You just take a screenshot and there's just a prompt right on that screenshot to image search in Google. And it just right away takes me to image search. Another thing you do, I'll do a lot, which was the example they use, is if I'm looking for a product. So they have an example of a lamp, right? If you see a lamp in a photo, you can screenshot, highlight, select the lamp in the photo, and it'll image search and find you that lamp. And you can go buy that lamp.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I was just thinking, David's really good with traveling, like finding good deals and stuff like that. So you can, that'd be fun if you can weave in more of your travel tips into this podcast.
I should do that, yeah.
Those are just things I would never think to do, like to image search. I mean, Priceline has a similar feature.
Priceline's the same thing, and you can do the same thing on Priceline.
Yeah, yeah. And so I that would have been really handy for me because there have been so many times I was trying to figure it out.
It's a real David hack. I agree. Yeah. Another way they use the same visual intelligence feature, though, which I thought was cool, you can take a screenshot of an image. And if somebody, let's say somebody texts you an invite to an event, which happens all the time.
Yeah.
You can take a screenshot of it and then there'll be a prompt at the bottom that says add to calendar. It's so useful. That's I'm going to use that a lot.
Yeah, I think so too. We also got, let's see, in the wallet, there's things like order tracking. I have apps that I specifically use this for. There's one called Shop, and I'm like, oh man, I feel bad for these apps. But it will be nice that anything you've bought with Apple Pay, you can now see in the wallet the status of the order and if how soon you get it.
This one I thought was a good example of using AI in a really practical way. If in Maps, it will remember your preferred routes. So, for example, we live in Fairfield, it's a small town in Iowa. When we drive to Des Moines, Maps always takes us on, its recommended route is just a bad route. It takes you like half an hour longer than if you just stay on the highway. So it will remember now that you chose to stay on the highway the last time you went to Des Moines, and it will, the next time you go, prompt you to stay on the highway instead of get off the highway.
Yeah, that'll be useful.
Really practical. Same thing, like the example they use is on your commute. If you drop your kids off at school, it will remember that and it'll give you the option to have the route that goes by the school to drop your kids off on your way to work. Really practical AI solutions.
Yeah.
I think those are all of my favorite things. Is there anything else that stood out to you?
I mean, one thing that's notable that we didn't get that I thought that we might is I thought that that Apple might offer more AI integrations, that they might not just be like ChatGPT is your choice. Maybe they would have Gemini be a choice or something like that. And we didn't see any more because they kind of built it out in a way where you could just integrate with multiple AIs. And I kind of think Apple probably will at some point have more options. But for right now, the only other AI integration is still ChatGPT.
I think Apple's really hoping that theirs becomes good enough that they don't have to do that. But they're behind on the AI. But overall, we shall see. Overall, I thought it was a really excellent iOS announcement.
Yeah, I'm very excited to get my hands on the redesign.
I'm excited about the redesign, and all of these solutions were really practical. The implementation of AI, despite us trashing, you know, the lack of the Siri integrations, was really practical uses of AI. Just really helpful updates that I think I'm going to use a lot.
And most of these that we mentioned are AI, I believe. Like, there wasn't total clarity on what was and wasn't, but for instance, the order tracking, like Apple's looking through your phone at different things and collecting it. I think they said that was AI. The Maps routes, keeping track of, like, it's like gathering information away. But like that, there's a little bit of a question mark where we don't always know 100% what's AI and what's not.
We left this one off, and I think it's a sign that you and I are pretty skeptical about Apple intelligence, but they did improve the image playground? Yeah, image playground.
Oh, yeah.
They include the image playground and Genmoji. It's notable that Donna and I forgot to mention it because Apple really spent a while on it and was excited about
it.
I think we're skeptical. If you've ever used image playground, so far I found it just to be a terrible experience. Whereas if you've ever done image generation in ChatGPT, it's really good. And so the difference was noteworthy, and that's why I feel dismissive. They are trying to get it closer to ChatGPT where you can just put in a prompt and it will generate that image. Whereas Image Playground up until now was really restrictive. It had to be like a friend of yours in contacts and will create a Genmoji of their face. And it just wasn't practical. So they're trying. I'm skeptical, but they're trying.
I was having a really hard time imagining any scenario where I would use it. I think that's like where it was Genmoji, where I've gotten hung up. I'm like,
yeah,
it kind of reminds me, I just feel like in general, Apple hasn't done, like, Memoji is another thing I fell flat for me.
Yeah.
And it just feels like an extenuation of that.
So. I totally agree. And I have not used yet. And even their examples, they were like, and you can add, there was like somebody, and they're like, if it's a party, make it a disco jacket. And I'm like, am I really doing that?
Yeah, it feels like dorky.
Yeah, it feels like when Apple tries to be cool, they really crash and burn.
Yeah.
When they try to be practical and helpful, they nail it.
Apple did have some interesting updates for CarPlay.
Yes, too. This is true.
That was sort of tacked on to, they didn't have
iOS.
Yeah. iOS, but yeah, so CarPlay, CarPlay Ultra is a new thing they're coming out with, and it'll be, of course, contingent on getting car models that support it. So it's not really something you can like go out and get this year. They didn't even say which model will have it yet. But it was really cool because it actually has – it takes over the entire operating system to control your car and show all of the information about your car, like how much gas you have, air tire, like all the different controls instead of just – the music and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I think will be huge over time, because I don't think anybody thinks that there's an OS better for your car than CarPlay.
Yeah, no. So
it's
amazing. I can speak to this a little bit because I have a Tesla. So I can speak to both sides of this. Tesla has hardware software integration, right? The OS that I have on my screen is the same OS that drives the car. That's what Apple is great at. And so that piece is amazing. I can use my phone as my key. I can turn on my air conditioning from my phone before I get in my car. I don't even need a key. I can control the air conditioner from my built-in OS from the Siri.
So you can have your car come get you at the door.
I can have my car come get me at the door if it can find me, which is a whole problem. But the integration is important. It's key to truly have an OS for a car. It needs to be able to actually control the freaking car.
Yeah.
And so this is a big deal. That being said, Tesla's OS is just not as user-friendly as CarPlay. CarPlay is just so well-designed, so easy to use. And Tesla's is good, but not great.
Yeah.
And so if CarPlay can catch up and have native integrations, especially because Tesla has their own OS, but most car companies don't do a great job with it at all, I think it'll be really helpful for most drivers.
My dad has a really nice BMW, and he's going through this right now where the operating system is terrible on the BMW, and switching back and forth between CarPlay and the operating system to control the car is really annoying.
Exactly.
So I think that'll be a big deal. Should we talk about iPadOS?
Okay, let's do it. So, iPadOS was the surprise hit of the show.
Yeah, I was like already kind of rolling my eyes because they're going to be like, and everything for iOS 26 also goes to your iPad, and that's it.
Which just to pause there, the reason why Donna's saying that, the last few years have been really trivial updates to iPadOS. They basically took whatever they did for iOS, tacked it onto iPad, and said, good, we're done. So I think when they said now iPadOS, and it was the last OS they announced, so we're clearly not going in the same order. I kind of just thought it would be like pretty much a nothing update.
I thought so too.
And it was huge.
So what's really cool about, I mean, it is getting all the iOS 26 updates to start with. So it also is going to have the cool kind of transparent Vision OS style design. But it seems like, and we're, you know, tentative to say this, but it seems like Apple has finally made multitasking functional on the iPad, which is something that has not been the case at all. And it's actually been extremely jumbled and confusing. And we've been frustrated because it's felt like Apple is just being stubborn about bringing features that are practical from the Mac onto the iPad to allow you to multitask functionally. And it seems like with this round, Apple finally said, we'll give you basically Mac style multitasking on your iPad and stop just trying to hold that line.
Yeah. So to back up a bit, I've had a long standing gripe about the iPad, which is that Apple markets it as a laptop replacement, as something you can do meaningful work on. They put a really powerful M4 chip in it. So it has all of the hardware to replace the computer, and then they put an operating system in where it's really hard to multitask. And then every single year, Apple releases a new solution for multitasking that's incredibly limited, really hard to use, and basically doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And every year, you and I sit here on this podcast and we say, Why is Apple doing this? Because the Mac is incredibly easy to multitask. They've solved this problem in the 80s, and yet here we are on an iPad, and they're struggling to solve it again. And so finally, after years of you and I and every other intelligent person in the world saying, use the Mac multitasking, they did just that.
They finally did. The way I would describe using my iPad up until now is I always feel really stuck. Like, it, you know, you could pull up multiple windows, but they'd be stuck in a certain configuration. And that was like hard to figure out how to get out of. And if you wanted to open another app, like just, it was a mess. And so now you can open up multiple windows that you can resize with your finger, custom sizes. You can have them overlapping. You will have some tiling options too, or if you want to have them like in a grid of like four windows on your screen, you can, or two side by side, but you're never stuck in that. You can always like do what you want.
Yeah. The key to this, and when we're saying make it like Mac, what we mean is the overlapping windows. So the windows can be any size. They're not restricted to these weird grid sizes that are really hard to get in and out of. They can be, your windows can be any size and they can overlap. And so when you do that, you can very easily tap from one window to the other and back, and you can see them both. You can move them around your screen, and it's fluid. It's intuitive. It's easy to use, just like everybody knows what I'm describing, because it's how computers have worked since the 80s.
Yes.
And so they finally did that. And when they announced it too, they said, we finally listened to you guys.
glad they acknowledged that.
Yeah.
They also brought a menu bar to apps. So yes, along the top, you'll see a menu bar just like you do on your Mac. So it's like just obvious where to get additional controls. So it is like the more, we were calling it the Mac Lite sort of, which is like, I don't know. Apple must have resisted this for so long because they want you to want an iPad and a Mac and not think one replaces the other. I don't think this makes it so that you wouldn't want your Mac. It just makes the iPad a better device.
Yeah, I honestly don't know why they resisted it so long. But yeah, it was the right solution then. It's the right solution now. Hopefully they pulled it off, right? Because I think we have to see it and use it to make sure that it works like we think it works. But I'm actually optimistic. It made me want to buy an iPad for the first time in years.
It's making me want to use my iPad that I have, which I like bought sort of an expensive iPad Pro recently. And then I use it basically just when I'm traveling to watch movies.
Yeah, me too. But the other thing though, I hope they can solve the weird phantom battery drain. Cause it feels like every time I start to use, I go to pick up my iPad to use, even if I've used it like a day ago, it's just dead. And then if I have to manage the battery charging on a daily basis, it just really falls apart for me.
It is a weird thing because the iPhone and the Mac both don't have this problem and the iPad does. So yeah, hopefully they fix that. Another cool thing with the iPad that I thought was, you know, for content creators is going to be a big deal is local capture, where you can record high quality video and audio that stores locally on your iPad. So for like podcasters, just video creation, that'll be great.
Yeah, maybe Donna and I may be more excited about this than the average user. But to give some context here, if you're recording an interview or a podcast over Zoom, you can record it in Zoom. But the problem with that is two things. First of all, Zoom will compress the audio and you end up with low quality audio. And second of all, it has both people recorded together, where really what you want is A, high quality audio, and B, individual recordings of each person's audio. And so that's what this does. So
you can edit them independently. Like if one person's too loud and the other person's too quiet, you can fix that easily.
Yeah.
Whereas it's one track, it's a whole nightmare.
I'm trying to think of a practical reason why anybody who's not creating content would be excited. I don't know. I'm excited. It was a great feature for content creators. Those are the big ones.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think we were the most excited about multitasking.
For sure.
Even though we're not rattling off a long list of features. Oh, here's another one. They also added kind of Mac style folders to iPad.
Oh, yeah.
Which is another thing that gets really tricky to manage when you're downloading files and downloading different documents, things like that. That's so easy to manage on your Mac and so tricky to manage on your iPad. You can have folders on your dock and you can download to those folders and it feels like a Mac,
Was it like a Finder icon similar to the Mac? I can't remember exactly what it looked like.
But they have folders essentially that look and feel and perform like a Mac, including a downloads folder and things like that.
Also, background tasks is another thing. They showed if you were like saving something that was taking a while to save, you'd be able to see the percentage done. Mm-hmm. Or downloading something, you'd see a similar downloading task bar. So those are nice things.
Yeah.
Again, that bring it closer to a Mac.
Yeah, which is where it should have been. Yeah. So glad you got there, Apple. Took you a while, but glad you got there.
It'll be fun once we can try this out to do like a hands-on with the new multitasking and tell you all about it.
I think just to kind of move on to the next one here, I think the most disappointing to me was Mac. Not that it was bad, Mac OS, which is now called Mac OS Tahoe 26. Uh-huh. So they kept the 26, but they kept their convention of naming it after random California cities, presumably so Craig Federighi can make a funny joke about their naming team. Tahoe is a fine name. It made sense because of liquid glass. But there just wasn't anything in it, really.
Yeah, I just have some notes. I mean, again, it visually looks the same. It has the redesign. Mm-hmm. And that Spotlight is better than it was. It has search history in mm-hmm. Spotlight. And you can do keyboard shortcuts to trigger certain shortcut actions. I wasn't looking at that being like, I'm going to use that.
I use Spotlight a lot. If it's intuitive and easy to use, I could see myself adding keyboard shortcuts. The problem is they seem to want to go through the Shortcuts app, which if it's anything like, so they added a Shortcuts app, which is great. But if it's anything like the iPhone Shortcuts app, it's going to be so hard to use that I'm going to want to never use it.
Yep. And, also they kept on showing all these things you can do in Pages, and it's like, who's using Pages?
Yeah, this is true. they did add, so this is where we talked about merging the operating systems. We already talked about doing that for iPad, but they added a lot of extra features to both the iPad and the Mac from iPhone, which I thought were nice. For example, they have a phone app now, which it hadn't occurred to me that there's no phone app on my Mac. Yeah. But I actually find myself making phone calls from my Mac all the time.
Me too. It's like, and it's right now it will allow you to do it, being like, well, use your nearby iPhone to make this call. But if they just had a phone app, it'd be a lot better.
It'd be a lot easier to use. I agree. They also have integrations for, they did this in CarPlay as well, which we didn't mention, but live notifications, which I thought was cool. So for example, if you order an Uber, you can see on your Mac, in addition to your iPhone, when that Uber is going to arrive. Same thing with Uber Eats and things like that.
Yeah. Or like flights, seeing how far, like the flight status. That was cool.
I thought that was cool for CarPlay specifically. You could see when your friend is going to arrive at the airport while you're driving to pick them up at the airport.
Yeah. I thought that was cool too. Should we talk about WatchOS?
Yeah, I feel like we gloss over macOS, but they spent really long time on the Shortcuts app, and I think you and I are skeptical that it's going to be good.
And they also spent a long time talking about gaming.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel like they just are really stuck on gaming in general on the devices in a way that I don't know is people care about that much.
Well, the problem is, and this is what the problem for them is, serious gamers use PCs. Full stop. Yeah. And Apple really hates it, and they really want serious gamers to use Macs, but they don't. So every year we have to sit here and listen to some update to their gaming hardware, all knowing that either you're not a gamer or you have a PC and nobody else cares.
Right, I know.
I'm sure I'm oversimplifying, but that's how I feel.
That's how I feel too.
Okay. So let's move on.
Yeah. So WatchOS, the short version of it is like WatchOS, I wasn't that impressed with. tvOS actually has some stuff that is cool.
Yeah.
But WatchOS, I guess to be fair, the redesign comes to WatchOS, so it's nice to have a nice new look. Also, there are some AI features for WatchOS.
For the first time.
For the first time. So that's a big deal. The only problem is, the biggest one they hyped is one that probably people are going to have mixed feelings about. Maybe some people will love, some will hate. And that's an AI workout buddy in the activity app. So if you're going on a run, it will look at all the data of your past activity. It will look at all the data from your current run and give you personalized coaching and encouragement. And so this is something, even though I was snarky about it during the event, I actually feel like if done well, I would like if it was like, at this point in your run, you should try to stay in this heart rate zone and like something. But like what it seemed like from the demo was just that it would be like a robot voice telling you to run faster.
Yeah. And I think the thing we were talking about here is that working out is such an inherently human thing to do. Mm-hmm. That it just feels so dystopian to have an AI in your ear telling you to run faster. It's like, you don't know what it's like, man. This is hard.
I know. And it also feels like, it feels a little invasive just because I feel like working out is, it is hard, like for people, and it's hard to get yourself to do it. And like, if you don't feel like you're doing a great job with workouts, having like a robot reminding you of that all the time sounds pretty annoying. Being like, you are failing in this area of your life.
I think some of the skepticism too comes from the Breathe app on your watch, which is just, some people like it, but I find it so frustrating.
The way you said that, it sounded so skeptical that anyone even does like it.
Well, weirdly, my mom was telling me the other day that she loves it.
Really?
And I thought she was joking, and I was like, yeah, no, I love when my watch reminds me to breathe. Otherwise, I would never remember. And she was like, yeah, me too. And I was like, oh, we're having two different conversations here.
Oh, that's so funny.
Which is, you know, how it goes with my mom.
Should find out from listeners, though. Do you like the breathe reminders? Email us at podcast@iPhoneLife.com. Really?
Email Donna. I don't want to hear it. No, just kidding. Just please do email us. Maybe I'm in the minority here.
I'm so curious.
But it feels, I guess to me, there's something that feels tone deaf about my Apple Watch from telling me I'm stressed out, because being stressed out is a uniquely human thing. And it reminding me to breathe just feels like such a bad use of technology to me. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, I'm aware I'm stressed out.
I'm trying to breathe. I know. So it feels, my fear is that it's similar, but I agree with you that if done well, it could be good. For example, I would like it if they're like, oh, you're actually 30 seconds ahead of your average pace on this run. I'm like, oh, cool.
I know. And like, I wish they showed more of that type of thing in the demo, because actually the way they described it before showing the demo sounded like that. Mm-hmm. And because that's something I have actually felt for a long time, is that Apple will your Apple Watch collects a lot of data on you, but I would love if there was some sort of coaching element where it's like telling you what to make of all of it. Being like, noticing things about your sleep patterns, noticing things about your, you know, rest and activity levels, and giving you personalized advice, like, for instance, take it easy today or push yourself harder. Like, right now the Apple Watch doesn't do any of that.
Yeah.
And so if this can do that, that's cool. But if it's just a robot telling me to run faster, no thank you.
Which the Aura Ring does more of that, right?
Yes.
So I could see it working similarly.
That was one of the things when I used the Aura Ring I really liked, is it would give you kind of like daily insights based on the data it collected, in the way that the Apple Watch up till now hasn't done.
They seem to have applied Apple Intelligence to the smart stacks, which is really a good use of Apple Intelligence. And I could see that being really effective. Again, smart stacks is one of those ideas that always made sense to me, but I never used, because it just never actually surfaced practical suggestions.
Yeah. Do you remember what the example was with the AI one? Like, it was nice because it would put a smart stack on top of something that would be like timely and important for you.
Yeah, I can't remember.
And it seemed like AI could have, in general, I don't really like features where your iPhone's choosing for you what you see, instead of like, I like to manually choose things. But I do feel like there's a world with AI where it gets really good at knowing what you need to see, and then I would like it.
Mm-hmm. They added the Notes app, which is a small addition, but seems nice. It seems like a lot of times with Notes, you want to just scribble something down really quickly as it pops in your head, and your Apple Watch is kind of a nice place to
do that. I'll probably use that.
Yeah. Or sometimes you like had a note that you wrote down for the next time you see somebody, and you could just pull it up really quickly on your Apple Watch. I could see reasons. In general, you can tell from our tone, not a huge update on Apple Watch. The main thing was adding Apple Intelligence. Other than that, it felt like a lot of small updates.
Yeah.
They had smarter prompts for when people text you. So somebody could say, where are you? And you could share your location. Again, these are all things we do on our iPhone, but bringing them to your Apple Watch seems nice.
Do you enjoy from the past year, the AI suggestions for text responses on your iPhone?
Let me think about that. Medium. They don't annoy me, but I rarely use them.
I rarely use them either. Yeah. I feel like they don't sound like me.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if I started using those, people would be like, what's up with Donna?
I do feel like, too, we've all in the last year gotten this AI filter where you can kind of hear when somebody writes an AI. Like, if somebody asks AI to write something to you, you can kind of hear it. It always sounds like you're saying weirdly formal.
Totally.
And not how humans speak.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of the problem, is it just doesn't get past that filter of, like, why did they write it that way?
Totally. Yeah, it'll be like, there's a lot of like wows as suggestions of things I would write back. And I'm like, I'd never say that anyway. Yeah. Yeah, that's a off topic. But okay, TVOS.
Yes.
TVOS I was excited about because they are going to bring automatic sign-in for different streaming devices.
That was really cool.
Because it's really, you know, when you're sitting down to watch TV at the end of a long day, the last thing you want to do is try to like enter in your password, and the Apple TV remote is kind of a nightmare for doing that.
I hate it so much.
So just being able to sign into your streaming services automatically sounds great. Also, profiles for Apple TV. That's mm-hmm. something, you know, a lot of streaming services have profiles already that'll like suggest either picking up the show you were just watching or suggested shows just for you. So that'll be nice to have. Just for the Apple TV.
Yeah. And the new liquid glass looked nice on it.
Yeah, it did.
They kind of hyped it up too much. They're like, and they'll have beautiful posters for each show. And you're like, okay. I know. But it did look nice.
It did look nice. And then one I was like surprised I was into was the new karaoke.
Same.
Feature.
I rolled my eyes when they started announcing it. And by the end, I was like, oh, I actually want that.
Yeah. So it turns your iPhone into the mic for karaoke, and then your Apple TV has the lyrics and, like, you know, how you should be following along on songs. And that seemed pretty cool because, like, I mean, that's a pretty big industry of, like, karaoke devices you can buy from home. And so if you can just use your Apple TV to do it, that's great.
Also, the way Apple Music does it, it's kind of been one of those underappreciated features because it uses, again, AI to remove the audio. So like a lot of time, or remove the vocals rather. So a lot of times when you're doing karaoke, it's these weird covers of a song where there are just like these weird keyboard noises that sound similar to Hallelujah, but are not Hallelujah. So now it's going to be the actual background music, but actually removing the vocals so you can sing. And for people like me who are, let's say, tonally challenged, you can have a little bit of the background of the vocals so you can match a note better. So it's a much better experience for karaoke than pretty much anything.
I definitely want a little bit of the background vocals always.
Yeah, you gotta match something. I know. No, it can be stressful when you're like, wait, what note is this song in? And then you're in trouble.
I think the reason I was surprised about this update is because karaoke, for the most part, terrifies me.
And it's not one of those things you think of as being like a tech company release, right? But
yeah,
I was excited. Fun. I will try it.
Seems like a fun family thing as long as everyone's accepting of being tonally challenged.
Well, unfortunately, everyone in my family is an amazing singer but me.
Really?
Yeah, it's really a bummer. I mean, good for them.
Yeah, but good
really
for
them. A bummer.
So we did also get updates to Vision OS.
Yeah.
So Apple's not giving up on their headset, we're discovering. And they've made strides towards the making the avatar less creepy. You know, so with this Air headset, one of the challenges is that if you join a video call on it, there's no camera pointed at you because you're wearing the device on your head. So yes. What do you do? So their solution is to create an augmented, an AI avatar for you. But in the first round, it's been incredibly creepy. Like, we did a few Zoom calls and it was like too distracting. People, yeah. David and I tried to join company calls and people are like, you have to turn that off.
Yeah, it's like really creepy. Anybody who knows anything about avatars, there's this concept called Uncanny Valley, which is if you have an avatar that looks really cartoonish and doesn't really resemble you, everyone kind of likes it, like a Memoji. And if you have an avatar that looks exactly like you, everyone thinks, wow, that's cool. It looks just like you. But you have this middle ground where it looks kind of like you, but not fully like you. And something about the way the brain is wired, it just like sends alarm bells off and really creeps you out. So it just was in that uncanny valley where it looked enough like you that it didn't look like cute and cartoonish, but not enough like you that it seemed realistic.
Yep.
So they said they did it. Clearly, they'd gotten feedback. Must be listening to the podcast. Clear. And so they said they'd completely redone it and it's supposed to look much more accurate. The jury's still out.
The jury is still out. The demo looked better than before, but honestly, it still looked uncanny.
That's the question. It can look better and still be uncanny.
Yeah.
So whether they get it out of the creepy level, we'll see.
Apple added widgets to Vision OS. That was a new one. They showed like widgets that look like they're built into the walls. Mm-hmm. So, which was kind of cool, actually. Like, it would put a big clock on your wall. But there's something kind of funny about it where it's like, don't most people have clocks?
Yeah.
So there was clocks. There was a weather widget that looked like it was a window in your wall looking out and showing you what
that's
the weather was
cool.
like. That was kind of fun, I thought. What else was there? Yeah.
I'm trying to remember as well. I'm looking.
Widgets in the new avatar are the notes I have is the things that seemed the most consequential.
But, yeah. You know, my main takeaway.
Oh,
go ahead.
The other one was that they're trying to, like, one of the big critiques of the Vision OS is that it's a very lonely operating system. Like, you're kind of trapped in your own little world by yourself. If you're watching a movie, you're watching it alone. You weren't collaborating with other people.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying to fix that. So they showed people like you can have a joint viewing experience where it's like two people sitting on a couch next to each other watching a movie on their Vision Pro. But I'm like, why?
As long as
you
have $8,000 to spare and no TV, I guess.
I know. Like, why would you do that? And then another one of people like changing a tire together on a car using Vision Pro because it would like show you how to do it. I don't know.
Here was one actual pretty big addition. They now have support for, I can't remember the term. I'm sorry. I think it's called like spatial video. So there's a lot of third-party video recording systems that can actually record spatially to be used for VR, like GoPros and Canon has some features like that and things like that. And Apple wasn't supporting them, which was stupid. And now they do. So for example, you could watch a GoPro and you can feel like you're in virtual reality the way it was designed to. So that was a nice addition. They support, this was another cool one. They support PlayStation VR controllers so that there's a whole industry of VR games out there that Apple really didn't tap into. And part of it is they didn't have controllers. So now you can use PlayStation controllers, play some of the fun games. So there was some cool stuff. My big picture takeaway is this. You and I both felt that the user experience was not bad. It was a well-designed, well-thought-out product.
Yeah.
It's just that you have this really heavy piece of machinery on your face, and it was heavy to use all day. You couldn't quite replace a computer, and it was incredibly expensive. But I think that the day is coming, and you see this now with improvements with Google and Facebook have better augmented reality. I think the day is coming where you can have things that are much closer to normal glasses that are augmented reality. So I think what Apple's kind of trying to do is just keep up with the software until the hardware catches up and people actually use it. Because I think they must know that nobody's using this, right? Like, I don't think anybody's using. I haven't met anybody who actively uses Vision Pro. I would love to hear from you if you're using it on a day-to-day basis. Send us an email.
Yeah, podcast@iphonelife.com. Let us know. But yeah, so those are the big updates we got. We were going to circle back to just talking about AI Siri and the promises from last year.
Yeah.
Before
the promises of last year.
Yeah, but before signing off for this episode. So a lot of you probably bought the iPhone 16 partially with the purchase decision being influenced by the fact that Apple promised that you would get this AI Siri. And the idea behind that was that it's going to be contextual, where it can understand different information you've shared on your phone and give you answers tailored to you in a way that still protects your privacy, because Apple's good about that. And so that's something that Apple said was going to come, like, kind of roll out slowly over the course of the year, but it never has. Like, as far as Apple's gotten, is it's a little more conversational. Like, you might not have to make your prompt exactly perfectly, and Apple still understands what you're trying to say. So, have you noticed Siri being any better for you?
No,
in the past year?
I've noticed it being really bad still.
Same.
Okay.
I feel like Apple has said that it's better, but I have yet to notice anything being better about it.
Agreed.
And so I personally feel pretty pissed about it, because I feel like I probably would have bought the iPhone 16 anyway, but it was definitely something I was really excited about with a new phone.
And I think this is where the problem comes in. It wasn't just that Apple made promises on the software side, because software is free. iOS updates are free. It's that they really made the purchase decision for $1,000, $1,500 sometimes dollar device hinge around the promise of Apple Intelligence and the promise of, oh, you need this or you're going to be left behind. And then they didn't release it.
I know. And so the AI Siri was the meatiest feature. Yeah. Like the other ones were kind of add-ons. So them being like, well, we did release it, doesn't really fly because the other things just, it's like, oh, you can use a cleanup tool in Photos or writing tools. It just wasn't enough.
Yeah, it was. They're cool. I mean, you know, the cleanup feature in particular, the writing tools. Do you ever use them? I never use them.
I don't use writing tools. I tested them out. Like, I actually think the one that makes your writing more concise is pretty good. It works well, but I personally don't use it often. But the cleanup tool I use.
Yeah. So they
I did like them, but it just felt like it was, you know, first being like, this is the future and all this stuff. Like, Siri felt like the one that was going to change your life.
Apple made big promises. They convinced people to spend $1,500 and then they didn't deliver those promises. And they're still a year later, not even putting a timeline in when they will deliver them.
They're also not even, it's like really not on brand for Apple. Because Apple usually under promises and over delivers and is like late on things only releases it once they think it's really good. Mm-hmm. And so this was weird too, because I was like, oh no, is this a new era where Apple announces things really early and then like maybe you'll get it at some point?
Yeah.
And I guess that actually makes me feel a little bit better about today's announcement. I was pissed they didn't say more about it, but I'm like, at least they're backing off of promising things they can't deliver.
I think they learned their lesson too. You look at what was actually announced in terms of all these features, and they felt like things that were practical and I felt confident Apple could deliver.
Yeah.
Which on one hand, I wish they'd taken some big swings with AI, but the fact that they learned their lesson and are not taking big swings that they can't back up is at least better.
Yeah. Like people can know what they're buying this year.
Yeah. But I agree. I think Apple users have a right to be pissed off.
Yeah. Do you have an understanding of like why the AI Siri is so hard for Apple to deliver on?
Not particularly, except to say that AI is really complex. And yeah. I think we maybe take for granted that it's not because ChatGPT is so good, but ChatGPT was so many years in the making before it got released to the public. And Apple just, I feel like, I also, to be honest, it's been years since with Siri that it's been a little bit behind. Like, I know. Even when comparing it to Alexa, it was behind.
And it does seem also like pretty. There's a high risk. Like, so if you're using contextual Siri to be like, schedule dinner for me with this person I met last week, like they're showing examples like that where you'd be like, how would this be able to like reliably work in a way that isn't going to like create a disaster for you? And so I feel like it's kind of high stakes and probably, I don't know. That makes sense.
I think it's a fair point, because if ChatGPT misinterprets my question, it gives me a stupid answer. If Apple Intelligence misinterprets my question, it texts the wrong person the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Right? The stakes are a lot higher.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess we'll give Apple a little bit of slack on that. I don't know.
I give them a lot of slack in that what they're trying to do is hard. Where I don't give them slack is that they promised me they would do it and told me I should buy this device because they were going to do it.
Right. And that's something, I mean, we've heard from a lot of you over the past year of being pretty outraged about that. And I think it's valid.
Yeah.
So I guess that's kind of a downer note to leave the podcast on. But we actually, I've overall today felt more enthusiastic than I thought I was going to, given the fact that last year we have this legacy.
I agree. I feel more enthusiastic than, I mean, overall, I thought it was a great announcement. Even with that, I'm glad that Apple didn't overpromise yet again.
Yeah.
And they said later this year, and I'm inclined to believe them given that they seemed, their tone was very much, let's try not to overpromise.
So, oh, you mean with the AI Siri?
Yeah.
What he said is like, you'll hear more from us about it over the coming year.
Geez,
it felt really very bad. Loose. Like to me, it felt like, we might not get it.
Okay.
Ever. I don't know. We'll see.
Someday we will.
Yeah.
Because it would be really embarrassing to Apple, given the speed with which ChatGPT is advancing. But
True.
I agree. I think both things can be true. Apple definitely dropped the ball on it from last year, and they had a great announcement this year.
Yeah. So we would love to hear from all of you. What of all the things that David and I have talked about are you most excited about from WWDC? Email us at podcast@iPhoneLife.com.
Yes.
Or also, if you have complaints from the announcement, let us know too. And if you're an insider, stick around. We have some special content just for you. Otherwise, we'll be back next month with another episode. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.